The Chasedown podcast presents A City of Champions, a seven-part series chronicling the Cavs' 2016 NBA championship. With help from fans who cheered against us, reporters who covered it, and the players who watched it, we'll take you game by game through the most improbable 3-1 comeback in championship history. Be sure to subscribe to the Chasedown podcast to relive the greatest series we've seen in our lifetimes.
One dribble, steps back, puts up a three, won't go, rebound tip taken by Spates, final seconds, it's over, it's over! Cleveland is a city of champions once again! The Cavaliers are NBA champions!
The series begins Thursday, April 9th.
Sacramento. Three on one. Bagley the step. Bagley with the dunk. And you can put it in the book and send it to the left.
There it is. Buddy Hield alone at the top of the Kings record book.
Oh, I like to see Fox force five in the open court.
Fox into the lane. Oh, if you don't like that, you don't like Kings basketball.
Welcome back to another episode of the Kings Pulse Podcast. My name is Brendan Nunez. Got Rich Abanowski on here as we usually do. What's going on, Rich? How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. I have not eaten Lucky Charms since we spoke, so no cereal updates, unfortunately. But I had a pretty good Easter, all things considered. How about yourself?
Yeah, doing well. Same old stuff, really. Yeah, spending time with the family that is in-house with me here, so... Yeah, I don't know. Same old stuff, really. But today on the pod, we got our next edition of these positional pre-hiatus report cards, and we got the shooting guards today. And this is going to be one of the more interesting ones, I think.
Definitely. I think that we had a good conversation about, Marvin Bagley brings up some interesting questions. We had, I think, Rashawn Holmes was kind of a fun one to go over where his value is. But with these guys, it does feel like the most interesting position to talk about.
Yeah, because there seems to be this Buddy versus Bogdanovich sort of situation. I mean, obviously, they are playing the same position and seemingly competing for that starting spot in a way. They do seem to be close friends personally themselves. But maybe there's a situation where Sacramento is only able to pay one of these guys long-term. And Bogdanovich specifically, Hield already got his money. Bogdanovich is going to be interesting to hear our value since he's going into this restricted free agency.
Yeah, and I wonder, did you have someone in mind to start with of the two?
I was going to let you do this because okay. I think I did it last time and it was out of your order.
I mean, only slightly.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, I'll let you start because, yeah, Hield and Bogey, they're close here, so...
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't really think about it too hard. I think you're talking about the Justin James, Kent Bazemore one, which could really go either way, and I think that this could go either way as well. But for some reason in my head, I naturally thought of Buddy Hield first.
Yeah, so did I, actually. That's the first one I have on my paper here.
Which is interesting because he is, as of as currently as we can get, he's the sixth man.
But he's also the leading scorer of the team.
Yeah, it's definitely true. Let's go ahead and start with Buddy. I mean,
I'm sorry, Fox is barely ahead of him in averages right now, actually, but close enough.
He's certainly above Bogdanovich. But yeah, let's start with him. There's not too much to talk about Buddy that you don't already know. He's a super elite shooter. We know that that's going to be, even in a bit of a down year, he's still putting up really impressive numbers. He's going to be impressive shooting the ball, I think, for the rest of his career. I don't see that as being an issue. And it's also a skill that you don't really age out of until much, much later. He's still right around 40%, 39.5 this year from three, 42.7 last year. Going back one more season, 43.1. Elite shooter, but outside of that, what do you think is his second best skill?
Well, being available and healthy, I think. Buddy does not miss many games. I believe last year was all 82. This year he has not missed a game, and he's well-conditioned as well. I mean, I don't think I can recall any conditioning issues with Hield, and that was part of the reason I thought that the transition game would work so well with Fox, is because Hield just has an unbelievable motor that I think really complements that three-point shooting. So again, it comes back to that, but I think healthy and in shape would probably be the number two for Hield. And that number one, like, having it's such an elite level, because he upped the volume this year, and I think that made the percentage go down a little bit as well. And he shot a bit more out of the pick and roll, which, as much as that frustrated a lot of us, I think he's still able to score out of a pick and roll, but that's about it. And you're going to get some turnovers there. But I think, yeah, that three-point shooting should not be undersold. And then my second would be just healthy, available, and in shape.
Yeah, we'll keep this to Hield, but I do think that the availability and the health is going to be an advantage for Buddy in the Hield versus Bogdanović conversation. Outside of the shooting, outside of the – and I don't know, would you even call it athleticism, or is it more conditioning, like you said?
Yeah, it's more conditioning, I think.
Yeah, because he's not like a super explosive dunk.
He doesn't get to the rim, which was one of my big things I had down, and I think that's a little bit of a lack of kind of that athleticism you're talking about, a little bit of a slower first step.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I feel like he'd be really good at soccer. He could run for 90 minutes and not show any signs of slowing down.
Right, he's the soccer guy that shows up at your pickup game. You're like, I do not want to guard him.
Yeah, that would be a nightmare.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to guard anyone.
Right. Fair enough.
I'll come on in the 85th minute, I guess. Yeah,
you're the injury replacement.
Yeah, give it my best shot.
There we go.
But yeah, I mean, he also has really obvious flaws. I think that we can get into passing. The passing did improve a little bit. Ball handling is where I get really worried about him at times. I feel like he really was a borderline non-competent ball handler as a rookie and in his second year. And he's gotten a little bit better at that as well, but you just see the handle. He just loses the handle pretty frequently. I think that's kind of what makes him an inefficient driver at times, and his ability to get to the rim is limited by his handling. Like, I don't want to see him go through traffic pretty much in any scenario. And then the defense, obviously, we got to get into as well.
Right. Yeah, I definitely feel you on the handle there, and I think that does lead to the turnovers. And his feel does not seem amazing on both ends, really, just understanding the rotations and stuff. I think he can be a little bit behind sometimes on that. And, yeah, obviously, you mentioned the defense. I mean, it's extremely hard to look over when, to me, he was one of the worst defensive players on the Kings this year, and there's some real competition there. So, yeah, I mean, just absolutely falling asleep. And I would say he's engaged most of the time. It's just a lack of understanding. I mean, your buddy is not going to be a good defender. And there's times Walton was not playing him at the end of games because he felt like he wouldn't be able to keep up on defense. We also pointed out that we felt like he was given unfair assignments on the defensive end. So maybe he's drawing an unfair hand a little bit this year. But Buddy, in general, is going to probably be a liability on the defensive end.
Yeah. You, I think, have been a little bit more into cleaning the glass. So you probably have some good on-off stats. I've been sticking more towards synergy. And I was wondering where you would guess that his overall defensive numbers shook out in terms of points per play on possessions that he defended.
Man, it's going to be fairly high. Like, are we talking like a 1 point?
How about just like a percentile from?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, probably 30th percentile at most, 20th percentile.
Yeah, I mean, you're pretty close there. He ended up at the 33rd percentile overall.
Okay. Yeah. Which yeah. I mean, yeah, like, do you feel like when he's locked in that he can hold his own on defense?
No.
Right, because he doesn't – yeah, I don't know what locked in really is for Hield, right?
I thought it would have been lower. like more towards 20th percentile as well. It's not just the possessions that he's defending the shot from, though. And that's kind of like where I grow more concerned, is when he doesn't make the right rotation or he overcommits, and then it's just the ball ends up being kicked around, or it's, you know, it's not even on his side of the floor, but the ball is moved around to his man, and he, like you mentioned, he's a little bit asleep. He's not quite there. You know, just is not going to be able to close out as effectively. I feel like it's more the breakdowns, which may not even end up being on him in terms of his synergy profile.
Right. Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. And there's no positives to really even point to. I mean, usually there's maybe a spot here or there, and I guess you could say that he'll try to steal some defensive rebounds and turn those into little tricky plays, but even at times that leaves him out of position. I don't know where there's even a positive to point to in Buddy's defensive game, which obviously, I mean, makes it hard for you to stay on the floor, even if you are scoring this amount and this volume that Hield is.
Yeah, I wonder if you don't have plus minus numbers up for him, I can pull them up on NBA. But I am curious, especially compared to Bogdanović, because that's what we're going to kind of be making. I mean, that's what the team is going to be probably having to make some decisions on eventually.
I do have the on-off cleaning the glass in front of me. Opponent shooting is just 0.6 effective field goal percentage higher with Hield on the floor. So really not all that much of a difference. All the percentages are a bit higher from all over the floor, but it's all really marginal for the most part here. Because, yeah. I mean, if we do touch on Bogey a little bit here, because this is comparatively, I mean, I don't think Bogey's that much of a better defender. I do think he's better, but I don't think it's this crazy jump.
I think he's better. I think he's significantly better. For reference on the synergy overall defense, Bogey is at 47th percentile. So, and that feels about right. I think he also ends up with tougher assignments more often, kind of gets pigeonholed into the three.
Yeah. I guess the difference between being passable and really can't stay on the floor is a bigger jump than I'm giving it credit for.
And it's kind of an eye test thing. So I don't know how much we can put, I don't know how much to value to put into that, but
right.
I can't remember the last time that I was furious at Bogdanović for making kind of like a boneheaded play on defense. Or I don't, if he's making these mistakes, I'm not noticing them as much, or they're not as egregious, where it feels pretty regular, where I'm like, who left this guy this wide open?
Right, and inexcusable. Yeah.
It's Buddy.
Right, yeah, definitely. Buddy's going to do those ones where there's just, again, inexcusable ones, and you're not going to see that too often from Bogey. I think he's obviously far from perfect with his defensive positioning and stuff, but he can hold his own. And like you said, I mean, I think there is a bit of versatility here, since Bogdanović has 2 inches on Hield, that he can slide down to that three, and it's not preferred, but he can give you some minutes there, and I think there's value in that as well. Buddy, I mean, you don't want him guarding the one, you don't want him guarding the two, you don't want him guarding the three. What are you supposed to do?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I don't know. And I wish, I don't know if Cleaning the Glass has filters on date, but I wish I could filter this easily to see how it was when Buddy was starting. Because I mean, he obviously played very, very well since moving to the bench, and part of my understanding of why that improvement came was because he was less often guarding an elite opposing player.
Right. Yeah, I would definitely assume that is the case. Cleaning Glass does have a filter, but I do not believe it applies to their on-offs. Sadly, it just goes to the general profile here.
I'll do a little bit of digging and we can maybe get back to that.
All right. But yeah, so Buddy Hield was just given a contract extension by the Kings, a 4-year upward of $80 million guaranteed. And I mean, next year you're talking about when that kicks in at $26.4 million on the books for Buddy. So if we're considering a player option for him, I think that you still want Buddy Hield on your team for $26 million. I mean, you can't. To me, Buddy is the guy, is one of the few guys. It's probably him, Fox, and Bagley when he's healthy. That's capable for, you know, dropping a 40-point game.
I don't know. It's tough because I feel like we're going to inflate everything if we really think about it as far as, like, the Kings in this situation. I mean, it's so easy to just say keep everybody because they don't really have free agent. There's not really a great free agent class, first of all. There's not much space, secondly. And thirdly, there's not much of a draw to Sacramento
right. In
the free agent market. So it's kind of easy to be like, let's just overpay for everybody. But if we put Harrison Barnes at 25 last episode, I would not go over 20 for Buddy on the same scale.
Oh, man. Yeah. I get that logic. At the same time, I mean, Buddy is your second scorer here, but I guess he could be. I definitely have been fine with the idea, playing with it in my head, of him being replaced with Bogey. And we've talked, there's not really a capable Barnes replacement that's easy to acquire like that for Sacramento. Yeah, I see where you're coming from. I mean, you can't put him higher than Barnes, really. 20, I almost want to put him the same number as Barnes, though. Because I had him a little higher here, but I was not taking into account the Barnes previous one like I should have.
So let's try to just use the Barnes analog here and just say, if you had to remove one player from the team going into next season, would it be Barnes or Buddy?
It's Buddy. Yeah, it's Buddy, because Bogey just steps into his place, and Barnes, what are you doing after that?
Yeah, that's true. And that's probably a little bit unfair too, just because it becomes a positional scarcity thing. Which player, if you were to put either player on the average team, or like, how many teams out of 29 outside of Sacramento does Barnes improve more than Hield, or does Hield improve more than Barnes? Because then I feel like you might have an argument for Buddy just on the shooting alone. How many teams could use just a knockdown shooter?
Right, and I think there is a lot of value in that. I mean, the spacing, the Sacramento starting Bielitsa for a while because they need spacing. Imagine if Buddy's shooting wasn't out there.
But I mean, on the flip side too, like, how many teams out there could use a 6'8 forward, like a good versatile forward defender?
Right.
It's tough.
I just think that Buddy is a floor raiser. And I think that's valuable for where Sacramento's at.
I agree that he's a floor raiser. Could you explain that concept a little more for anyone that may not, versus a ceiling raiser?
Yeah, guys that are going to take you out of the bottom feeders, but they're not going to be winning you playoff games necessarily. And then in comparatively, a guy that is not going to raise your floor, where if he's one of the main cogs, he's not going to be able to absolutely run the team. But if he is a piece among others, he can be the reason, a floor raiser could be the reason that you are able to reach those new heights. I'm sorry, a ceiling raiser is a reason you're able to reach those new heights. But yeah, the floor raiser, I think Buddy can take you to a certain point as your number one or two guy. And we're kind of seeing it. I think it's about that 8 seed. But I think that's pretty important for Sacramento right now, because Bagley's not ready to be the other one alongside Fox.
I think that last year when we did this episode, I thought that Buddy Hield could be a number two or number three option on a relatively good team, on like a a lower end playoff team. And I don't know that I think that anymore. I think that he's a great fourth or fifth guy.
Is he like a Lou Will, like a super six man?
Yeah, I think that that's a good example. I mean, I think that he, yeah, I mean, if Rashawn Holmes is like the Harrell of this team, maybe Buddy's more like the Lou Will, yeah.
Yeah, which is hilarious because we had that comp previously with Bogdanovich as the Lou Will at the beginning of the year.
That's true.
But yeah, so, okay. How do you feel about going even with Barnes at that $25 million?
I don't really feel good about it, but it's tough because, okay, I'm just going to keep throwing hypotheticals out there, and if they're stupid, ignore them. We can move on. But what's more likely, that Hield last year is closer to like who he really is, or the Hield this year? Because we know he was put in two very drastically different situations, and it resulted in two pretty different outcomes.
I mean, I think it's a little lower than last year, but I think it's probably closer to that. Like, the beginning of this year was just a rough transition for him, but in January, he shot 41% from three. February, he shot 46% from three. So I would probably credit the rough start to kind of a changing situation, and the team in general was struggling to get used to Walton's scheme. So I would say it's closer to last year. But ultimately, I mean, it's kind of somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, somewhere in the middle, I guess, it makes sense. And I guess that kind of puts him equal to Barnes. I will say I just looked up didn't get the on-offs, but I got the net rating for Hield before and after being moved to the bench. And he was a negative 4.2 net rating before going to the bench, and then after going to the bench, he's been a positive 4.5.
Wow, that's a big jump.
It's a big jump.
Yeah, and yeah, we definitely know that was working. So I was talking with a Dane Moore, Minnesota guy, earlier today, and he was asking, and we were doing restricted free agency, so, you know, Bogdanovich, Beasley, and all that. But then the conversation switched to Hield here, and he asked me if I thought that Hield's contract was going to be viewed as a negative value.
It absolutely will be.
It will, right?
It will be, but only, I think, because of COVID. And I don't want to get into like the whole – I don't want to get too far in the grass about the COVID-19 stuff. But, I mean, I think that it's going to have really serious drastic effects on the salary cap.
Yeah.
And if the salary cap were projected as it was projected before all of this, I think it would be a pretty fair deal. And I think we kind of – that's where we're at. It's like it's a good deal, fair deal. Like, we can all walk away from that deal happy.
Yeah.
And now I think it's going to be pretty rough.
Right. And with this, I mean, do we factor in the idea that if Buddy doesn't start, that he could potentially be requesting a trade out of here? Because, I mean, that in itself lowers his value as well.
I don't even know how to deal with that right now,
right,
either. Because how are you going to request a trade if there's no basketball happening? So, right. I mean, it seems so far away to even think about. I just don't know. I just don't know. And I think that problem might even be solved a little bit, because Bogdanovich, we're going to have to move on to him in a second, but I think that he probably ends up signing at a pretty low dollar amount.
Right. He definitely is. He definitely is.
And then that issue may not be as serious to bring Bogey off the bench, or to tell Buddy, hey, listen, you're going to come off the bench, but you're making twice as much as the starter. Can you just deal with that?
Right. With currently no NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think there's nothing to bet on. Well, you'd be wrong. Our exclusive partner, BetOnline, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on. From their online casino to poker and blackjack, they're bringing Vegas to you. If you're missing the NFL, it's no problem. BetOnline has live daily Madden NFL 20 simulations you can bet on. You can still bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, and even the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. All open 24 hours a day and all online. Use promo code BLUEWIRE to join today and receive your new welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online wagering solution. Okay, so I can go a little below Barnes, but meet me here. Let's go like, I actually, if we're doing round numbers, we can go with 20 for Barnes. I mean, for Buddy.
I'm fine with 20 or 25. I think as long as we as long as we accept that we're doing these dollar amounts based on our the previous projections for the cap and thinking that it would continue to rise, then I think 25 would be fine.
Right. Okay. And then I think the way that we could talk about Bogey, what do you feel like the main differences between these two players are? Obviously there's the shooting, and then what do you feel that Bogey offers? We'll go offensively that Buddy doesn't.
So as far as like facilitation and passing and handling the ball, as far as being an initiator, I am so much more comfortable with Bogdanović initiating my offense.
For sure. And I think that's the main thing here. You're not comfortable in the slightest with Buddy doing it, but Bogey, I mean, give him point guard responsibilities a little bit sometimes. I don't think that's his preferred role offensively, but his playmaking is good enough that he can handle that sort of situation. And then the versatility to his game comes from the same time as Buddy. He doesn't really get to the rim. And again, there's not really that athleticism, but he has this European craftiness to him where, you know, the mid-range is still a big part of Bogey's game, and he hits that efficiently. And that keeps defenses honest where, you know, he's not just going to be a three-point shooter. He will take a couple steps in and knock down that shot as well. So I think there's more versatility to Bogdanović's offense, but it is headlined by that playmaking and passing for sure.
Yeah, and I'll say that going through his synergy profile, he kind of does it all at a very similar level.
Yeah.
His four most common play types are spot-up, pick and roll ball handler, transition, and handoffs. And he's between 62nd and 67th percentile in all of those. So he is good at all of those, right? And then there's a little bit of variation, but not much. I mean, 43rd percentile off screens, 78th percentile isolation, 78th percentile in cuts. But that's really, I mean, that's pretty close together. Right. It's a tight scatter plot for Bogey. He does a lot of things well, pretty much everything well. And especially I'll mention the shooting. It's a hot take, and obviously I don't think he's on the same level as Hield, but I am very comfortable with Bogdanović shooting the ball.
Yeah, as am I, especially, you know, I think catch and shoot and off the dribble, both. He excels at there, and it's underrated the ability to be able to do the both of those.
It's his shooting is really underrated compared to Buddy. Do you happen to have his stats? If you don't have them up, don't look at them real quick, okay. His shooting stats. So Buddy, just for reference here, attempted 9.7 threes per game, and he hit 39.5. Off of memory, you've probably seen it relatively recently, but off of memory, how do you think Bogdan shot this year?
I think he has maybe 4.5 attempts on 38%.
So he shot 36.1%.
Okay.
Which is significantly lower, and like we know he's not as good of a shooter. But I was impressed by how many attempts he was putting up per game. 7.2.
Oh, wow.
That's a lot of attempts.
I did not realize. Yeah. I did not realize that his profile, and yeah, that it was so effective on or reliant on this three-point shot. And a lot of it's above the break, like from my memory, a lot of it's self-creation.
A lot of it is self-creation. And I think a lot of that comes from some of the injury patches where Fox was out and he kind of had to run a lot of the show, but he did really well. Like that, like those are some of his best stretches of his career.
Right. And I think he fits seamlessly in most places as well. Most lineups that Sacramento is able to roll out there. I don't think that he was doing great since he had been moved to the starting lineup, and maybe he was capable of more individually, but him being out there and just a cog in that offense, I think helps the ball move in general very well, especially talking compared to Hield. There's just a different ball movement when Bogdanović is out there. And his basketball IQ is shining in his cuts. Like, we see his synergy that he's got going with Harry Giles, because they're both just very smart players there. And yeah, the intelligence of Bogdanovich really shows on the offensive end as well, with all of this craftiness and capabilities that he's got there. And like you said, I don't think there's any really elite skills necessarily, but he's solid all the way around on the offensive end. And to be a 6'4 creator that can initiate an offense, I mean, this is a very valuable skill set that Bogdanovich has here.
It's a very valuable skill set. And he is, he can be utilized in a lot of ways. He's kind of, he's been referred to as like the Swiss Army knife for the Kings. He can come off the bench and kind of be put into any situation. He can lead the team. Just pulled up the stretch of 15 games when Fox was out. Really impressive numbers from Bogdanovich. 30 minutes a night he played. Shot 45% from the field, 40% from three on seven attempts per game. 16.4 points, 4.3 assists. You know, really nice steal numbers as well this year. You know, he's not a stellar defender, but he had a couple little runs where he was – I remember he was leading all six men of the year candidates in steals for quite some time. He had a pair of four steal games during that stretch as well.
Yeah, the defense is definitely an improvement over Buddy. I guess my question between the two of them would be, in regards to their offense, is – do you feel like Bogey could be a number two option on a team pushing the eighth seed, you know, on this Sacramento offense?
I don't. I don't. But to be fair, I think I just said the same thing about Buddy.
Okay. I mean, Buddy's kind of been doing it, though, no?
I don't think it's been going very well. I mean, yeah. Have they made the playoffs?
This is fair. Yeah.
Yeah. That's my concern, is that at the end of last season, I thought that that's where we were headed with Hield. And I feel like I was wrong. Whereas to me, he's kind of come down to that Bogdanovich level where I'm comfortable with him as a starter or the first man off the bench, but I don't feel like he can be a 1-2 or even a number three option.
Yeah, and I mean, the skill set is different, obviously, in what you're getting here, but I think I'm more confident and just feel like there's more value in what Buddy is giving you offensively, because, again, I think that when Buddy catches fire comparatively to Bogey, that you're just getting an absolutely different animal in Buddy. And, yeah, obviously, they both are going to be able to go cold for stretches here as well. I think we've seen both of them do that. Buddy, the beginning of this year, Bogey's had consistency questions at times throughout his career. But I offensively, I do still lean Buddy here, probably primarily because of his ability to just absolutely take over a game. And I think he has games and halves where he's able to be a superstar offensively.
Offensively, I definitely lean Buddy. But then defensively, you lean Bogey probably.
For sure. 100%. Yeah, I don't think there's really any argument there. I know you asked me, I think, beginning of the year, and the more I watch it, yeah, it's 100% Bogey over Buddy there. Like we said, I think that Bogey's just a passable defender, and that's a decent improvement over Hield that you're not even really able to put out there. And yeah, I mean, these guys do feel repetitive in a way. Because, I mean, it's hard to get good defensive lineups where the both of them are out there, really. And also, it's guys that need the ball in their hands. So I see where the argument comes of potentially needing to choose between the two here.
Do you think that argument originates in their personal feelings? Like, do you think if these players were totally content with their roles, whatever roles you chose to give them,
yeah,
would you have any issue with playing them, not necessarily in the same lineup, yeah, but, you know, say you gave them both 28 minutes a night and
right, No, there probably wouldn't be any issues. No, it's mainly because there have been stories that started up and things. And, I mean, obviously, if the team was winning, I think this would be fine, you know? But, yeah, no, I think you're right. That this totally could work. You look at OKC running three guys that are, what, 6'5" at the highest? So, yeah, I mean, I think that this definitely could work where you kind of stagger them throughout the game, and then in the closing lineups, you definitely are able to play both of them out there, scoop Barnes to the four. So you're right. There definitely is a scenario where this works. I guess it's just starting to feel like that maybe does not end up being the case.
Yeah. And then if push comes to shove, let's put contracts aside for a minute. Who would you rather have?
This was so hard for me because there's an argument both ways. Like this is so close enough that, yeah, we'll get to the money in a second. I have to go Bogey though. Like you've seen it work better with the starting lineup, right? If we're talking about in regards to what Sacramento has going on for them. And it's funny because last year I felt like I was saying this for Hield, where he felt like the Klay Thompson, the perfect fit alongside Fox because of this transition play and being able to keep up with him and all that. And now it feels like Bogey is fairly easily the better fit here. I have to go Bogey here.
It's so tough because I like Bogdanović more as like a person than the player. Not that Buddy isn't a great person, because he is, but I have more of an affinity for Bogey. So like as far as the fan in me, it'd be so hard for me to say goodbye to Bogey, to see him leave Sacramento. And I think that thankfully he won't. I think that the Kings will match whatever comes in, and I think that number will be pretty low considering, you know, everything that's going on in the world. But the way I see it is, I've only been covering the Kings for a couple of years as a blogger and whatever. So, like, 2 years ago, I saw them as, like, totally even, like, different, very different skill sets, very different styles of play. But as far as their on-court value, it was, like, a total wash. And then after that year, the breakout year for the Kings, I felt that Buddy had really moved ahead. Had taken a significant leap forward.
Yeah.
And, you know, where he was ahead of Buddy, ahead of Bogey by, like, you know, I'd pay like Buddy $5 million more, so something like that. And then I feel like this year he's moved back down to where it's kind of a wash again in my mind. But I think that I'd have to say, kind of going back to that conversation about which version of Buddy is the real Buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Banking on the concept that it could be somewhere in the middle, where say I have Bogdan as a $20 million a year player, which is super high now. I think that's too high probably, but say that's how I felt before. And then I had Buddy, he moved up to like a $25 million a year player. And then I think he's moving back down, but I want to find that middle ground, and I would go like 22.5 to Buddy, 20 to Bogey.
Really? Okay. Yeah. And, you know, I will say part of my reasoning for Bogey here is that I'm considering what Walton's system is. And I think that makes it a little less likely that you're getting the last year Buddy, because a lot of that to me was success from a just ridiculous amount of transition that was going on.
That's a totally good point.
Which I don't know if you want to decide who you're keeping based on this coach that you don't like, that's,
right.
You know, but I take that for what it's worth. I think Bogey is better than Buddy in Walton's offense.
I think that's totally a fair point. I think that Buddy is a better player in a vacuum. But
yeah.
We're not in a vacuum. We're in Sacramento with right. Luke Walton. So
you put Buddy a little higher money-wise, yeah?
Just a touch. Just okay. Like
I could not justify putting either one higher than the other. I had to do the exact same number. I couldn't get either way.
I'm trying to find some way to differentiate them, but going into this, I thought $20 million apiece, and like that's a fair deal. But
yeah.
I could also see myself, if we're trying to find some differentiators, I could put Barnes down at 25, which feels high now as well, but could do Barnes 25, Buddy 22.5, Bogey 20 million. I don't know. This is a struggle for me.
Yeah. I could definitely get there. I mean, the Buddy thing, like I said, I think that he probably does he help you win more games throughout the year?
He helps you lose more and win more.
Right. Right. That's perfectly worded. That's definitely what you're getting with Buddy here. But the health is a big one. Like Buddy huge plays point. So much.
That's a huge point. We don't talk about that enough. I made the argument that Bogdan should take that four-year $52 million deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I made that argument based on his health and Bogdan's health. It's not great. I mean,
right.
He's missed good chunks of seasons. He's had two surgeries on his knee. He had some significant injuries in the EuroLeague. It's not as consistent, and Buddy just doesn't miss games at all. I think that he was right not to take that deal, but I think he'd be smart to take it now, considering everything that's going on with the coronavirus.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's right around there. I think you could get up to 460. I think definitely could make sense for Bogey with everything going on here. Yeah, and I can put Buddy a little bit above him here. I think that, like we said, even though he will lose you more games than Bogey will, I think that Sacramento, the situation that they're in, really could use a guy that's going to win you some games as well. And Buddy has those capabilities. I don't quite see that from Bogey. Bogey, I mean, he will make some clutch shots. I'm not going to take that away from him, and he'll have a quarter or so that he's able to really impact a game, an 8-minute stretch, something like that. Buddy can do it for an entire game and only a couple times throughout the year, but you'll get halves here and there where he's just absolutely take over. And obviously the defense is a factor there, but the health that we mentioned, I think that even though it's not ideal in Walton's offense, Buddy was getting a little bit more used to it. And if everyone's healthy, if Bagley's healthy as well, I do think the pace comes back a little bit well. That helps Buddy. I can put Buddy a little bit higher than Bogey here.
Whatever you want to do. I don't even want to decide this. I think it's, yeah, whatever.
It's close enough.
Whatever you're comfortable doing, I'm comfortable with. It's a real tough debate. I think it's going to come down to what their actual real life value contracts are. And I think that, and it's going to come down to where they're, you know, where they personally stand on their roles within the team. So
right.
I could easily see a situation where we end up with Bogdanović and not Buddy Hield, but I don't think that's going to be because, you know, Bogdanović is a significantly better player.
Right. So Dane Moore floated around this idea to me regarding Buddy when I said, I do think he'll be a negative asset. I mean, does that mean that Sacramento, like if you're considering trades this offseason, how do you look at something if you're talking negative value? You're not necessarily needing these draft picks back, or how do you feel of a James Johnson is expiring? And nope. I didn't know about this James Johnson thing.
We've talked
just pretend
about
like
that
that's
before.
Any name. Pretend like that's any name in okay. Salary filler, and a Jared Culver and a young upcoming guy.
A young upcoming guy who had like a really
terrible 50% from the free throw line. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's no good at all. And I saw your poll, like no one right. is on board for this.
Yeah, which doesn't surprise me. But if Buddy asks out, if Buddy requests a trade, I mean, are you still pretty upset with that return?
I mean, I'm not furious with it personally, but Culver had just such a
yeah.
awful year that I mean, what could you even trade Culver for? Like, say it's all sliding doors, because what could you trade Culver for? Like, what draft pick could you trade Culver for? I mean, this is an even weaker draft. Would he go in the top six if he were
right
drafted again? Maybe. I mean, he certainly seemed like he should have. Like, he probably would have gone number one if he were in this class, but then he came out and had a terrible year. I don't know that you could even get like the 12th pick for him. I don't know. If you're the Kings, would you rather have Culver or the 12th pick?
Right. And it's probably the 12th pick. I don't know much. I don't know enough about Culver, but more so it was, you know, if the situation came up with Buddy this offseason, I mean, the value of his contract potentially being a negative asset, like we're saying, if he were to request out, I think you're not looking, and we've dove into this before, you're not getting much in return.
You're not getting much, but you're not going to get what Buddy is worth either. I don't think that – so especially if the cap comes into play and right. gets lower, you aren't going to get any space out of that deal. So you're just getting a worse player. And like, yeah, he's younger, but is that what Sacramento fans want, to get younger and not better, to like get significantly worse, but younger?
That's, more, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that really solves anything.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, just throwing that idea out there with his value. I think it's going to be interesting on this next contract, but we want to touch on the two G League, the two-way guys in this one as well, right?
Yeah. Do you want to give a quick grade, A through F for these guys?
Oh, shoot. Yeah. I keep forgetting to do these beforehand.
We're all over the place, man.
Yeah. It's okay. No so if C, I think what we've been doing is C is what you would expect from them, right?
Yes.
I think you got to go a D for Buddy.
Man, that feels so harsh, though.
Right, but it's based on how we're doing it. The like C is you came in, you did exactly what we expected. He probably had, yeah. I mean, like if I'm talking about grades in general, it's probably like a C year. But based on how we're doing it, it's a D.
I would like. We're not doing minuses and pluses.
We haven't been.
Yeah, I would have given Buddy like a C minus and Bogey like a C plus.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, but I could also be talked into a D and a B for Bogey.
A D and a B. Okay.
Yeah.
You think Bogey overperformed?
I think that he did. I mean, not by much. That's why I want to go C plus, but I also think that not many players really overperformed, with the exception of Holmes. I mean, I guess Fox came on stronger once he returned and then Bielitsa, but that is I don't know.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there that it should be C minus, C plus, but we can, for the sake of this, since we haven't been giving plus and minuses, I can go there with you, D and B. D for Buddy, B for Bogey.
Or we can just give them both C's. I'm totally fine with that, too.
That sounds better because, I like that one.
I'm fine with that, too.
We'll go with both C's for these guys. And then for Kyle Guy, again, a guy that, you know, not – getting any NBA minutes. We're talking about two guys that are pretty much spending all of their time in Stockton here. And the question between them kind of comes to more of what do you value, right? A 3-and-D guy versus a pure shooter.
Yeah, in a weird way, this is like the G League.
I didn't even think of that. It is.
Yeah. So I will say that first off, Kyle Guy kind of turned it up a notch near the end of their season. he was shooting. I mean, obviously he took a million shots. I mean, he averaged 17 and a half attempts a game,
mm-hmm.
And 10 of those from three. And for a while, it was not looking good. I mean, he was like 35-ish% from the field and not, you know, around there for three as well. He picked it up towards the end. I mean, he ended up on the year shooting 9.6 threes a game in the G League for a 40% conversion rate, which is very nice. I mean,
yeah,
that's solid. However, what do you think his listed weight is?
Oh God. I just was looking and saw he's 6'1". I didn't get
a which weight. Is, I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's generous, right?
Yeah.
What do we won? 70?
Yeah, 167. Yeah. Which
it's gonna get bullied.
It's not gonna work. And I mean it doesn't work. I don't think that he, I mean, his defense is it's just he's not going to work as a defender against NBA players. I don't see how that's even really possible.
And the offense is pretty much I shouldn't say all shooting, actually, because there is some playmaking there as well that's in the works.
Not a lot, yeah.
No, yeah, there's a high turnover with it as well. So, like, it's in the works, I guess, he's initiating. But his field goal percentage is practically the same as his three-point percentage. Like, Kyle Guy, yeah. you're talking about is his three-point shot, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then Daquan Jeffries is more of this 3-and-D where you got more size to him. He's also got a decent three-point percentage. I mean, 6.9 attempts, 33.9% from three, and then you get 46% from the field, a little bit of a more well-rounded game because there is some impact on the defensive end. I'm just going to come out and say I just lean Guy because I think that if you're talking about the end of the bench guy, that was not intentional, that it's more valuable to have someone that can come in and just shoot complete lights out. And that is just a valuable skill set to have sitting there when I don't know if I trust a defensive focused guy that's coming from the G League. Like you have to, I think it's a lot harder to have your impact on the defensive end and then just try to not be a liability on offense than the other way around.
That's interesting. I lean very strongly Jeffries.
Okay. And it,
yeah.
And it's just kind of like you said, I mean, Guy's just going to get killed no matter, right?
So as big as the difference is between their shooting, like, as you mentioned, Guy's a much better shooter and he might have that one. I mean, it's not even an elite skill. Like he's not, it's not that elite. It's very good. But like a guy like Gabe Vincent, right? He shot even a bigger volume, even made even more of those shots. It's not like he's like Miami's using him as some ace in the hole shooter. It's going to go down with NBA competition. He, like I said, mid-season was shooting around 35%. It wasn't really falling. There is a chance that he becomes the kind of guy who you can, I don't know, bring in when you're down seven with 45 seconds left in a game and just hope that he can, like, hit some like, you know, 30-foot heaves. But that's not – I don't see that as useful where – I mean – it is useful if that's how it plays out, but the difference is between their shooting, Jeffries can shoot. Like he can, like seven attempts per game. For a while he was up there. He was comparable to Guy for a portion of the season as far as percentage. The difference between their shooting is not as big as the difference between their size. Like Daquan Jeffries is a grown man. He's 6'5", 225. Like, he's got the body of, not even a linebacker, but he's bigger than linebackers. When watching him play, like, I get him confused with power forwards a lot. He looks like a four a lot of the time. And that's, to be fair, that's in a smaller league. Like, generally, the G League player is a little bit smaller. And he played the four in most of his time at Tulsa as a college player. And he's being, like, moved out to the wing. That when I spoke with Anthony McLish, the GM of Stockton, he said that they're working on turning him from an interior guy to a perimeter guy. And if that development, if it works, then it works. Like if it works, then he's a functional NBA player. Not a star or anything, but if it works, then you do get a guy who can come off the end of the bench and eat up a couple of minutes or whatever. But if Kyle Guy works, I don't know if that works. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so NBA, the G League site has Daquan Jeffries listed at 6'5". I mean, that's still – is that really your, you know, switchable wing that's super valuable in this league?
Neither of these guys are going to be super valuable. Like, let's get that clear.
Right.
I think that at 6'5", 225 – he's got a chance to play, you know, to be a rotation level wing player. I think at least he's got a shot at it. And I believe let me double check this. Yeah, I mean, his wingspan is 6'11 and a quarter. So,
oh, wow. Yeah.
I mean, he does have 7 foot, I see listed here, so wingspan. So, 42-inch vertical. Like, he's got the athletic profile where that, if it clicks, then he works. And I think, I mean, he's a lot bigger than Bazemore. So, a guy like that size, you can think like a stronger, kind of bulkier Bazemore.
Yeah, that's interesting. I do agree with you that if it clicks, it would be much more valuable to have Jeffries than Guy, because this build in general is more valuable than what Guy's is. I think that Guy right now has a more translatable skill, and there's just less cleaning up that may need to do, and Guy still has plenty, but I think that Guy could get thrown out there for 8 minutes a night and contribute somewhat with just having that. I do think it's close to elite 3-point shot.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you think that he can ever be like, how elite is elite? Like,
I mean, this is still a third string point guard. I'm thinking, you know, you're throwing Shabazz Napier, but that's like, Shabazz is a little too crafty. But, you know, I mean, you're talking a third string point guard that's just coming in there and chucking up shots against the opposing team's backup one.
Yeah, no, I don't see it. I mean, it's literally just a chucker. That's like, I think his ceiling is actually a lot lower than Jeffries, because
yeah,
I think at his very best, he's going to be just a spot up in the corner kind of guy. And that's
yeah,
a very, very low ceiling. Like, even the guys that we think of as just shooters, like, I don't know, like a Korver or whatever, he's still like 6'7". Like,
right.
You still kind of need
that big too, yeah.
Who, like, I guess JJ Redick is pretty small,
yeah,
but he's
right. There's that, like, a JJ Barea, I don't think he's that quite shooter.
Guy doesn't have like the handles of any of these point guards that we're talking about,
right? Yeah, for sure there, and I totally agree with you. I think the ceiling is higher for Jeffries. I guess my argument was that I think the floor is higher for Guy, and yeah, I don't know what the likelihood of these guys reaching their ceilings is, you know.
I think that's fair that the floor is higher for Guy. He has one skill already that works for him.
Yeah,
but some of the defense for Jeffries, like, you see flashes of it, and you're like, okay, this can work if they can get him those perimeter skills, develop that for him. It could work, and Jeffries was a pretty good shooter in college, 39%.
Mm-hmm.
39, 39, 37, those 3 years. And I don't know. I'm not high on either guy. I don't know. We're probably wasting a lot of time. But I will say, like, I don't know. A guy that's like 167 and was drafted 55th overall, it's so hard for me to see it working.
Yeah, totally understandable. And if we're talking money for these guys, I mean, are you really pushing anything more than a minimum contract to keep both of these guys rather than, you know, another one of these second rounders?
I would not give either of them guaranteed money.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm the same here. I haven't seen enough from either one. So I think that's all we got. We decided on 22 for Buddy, 20 for Bogey. C's for both of them here, and no guaranteed money to either of the two ways guys. Just haven't quite seen enough. But I think that's all we got here, man.
That's about it. If you want to do Buddy and Bogey at the same level, I'm also fine with that. Would you rather do 20 and 20 or have that difference?
You talk me into the difference. I'm good with it.
Okay.
So we can keep that. But yeah, that's going to do it for this episode of the King's Pulse podcast. Thank you to everybody for listening, and you will hear from us again in the next couple of days.